WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen, in for Terry Gross. Most classical percussionists make their music from the back of the orchestra, not Evelyn Glennie. As a solo performer, she positions herself right up front. It's a statement of the respect she believes percussion instruments deserve and a reflection of the fact that she's profoundly deaf and needs to be where she can see everything. Glennie uses her keenly developed sense of touch to be able to, quote, hear the music internally. She has said, "I don't think in terms of loud and soft. Instead, I think of sounds as thin or fat, strong or weak." Glennie bristles at being referred to as a deaf musician for fear that she'll be seen as a novelty act or a kind of freak show. She's performed all over the world, written an autobiography, and been the subject of a documentary. She won a Grammy in 1989 for a Bartok CD with conductor Sir George Scholte. And she was recently voted Scotswoman of the Decade and named a member of the Order of the British Empire. Evelyn Glennie is in Philadelphia to perform this weekend with the Philadelphia Orchestra. She'll play James McMillan's Veni, Veni, Emmanuel, a concerto commissioned specifically for her. Let's hear some of the first movement.
Did you come from a musical family? Was there a lot of music played in your house, sung,
no,
performed?
Not at all, not at all. My parents at the time were farmers. My two brothers were interested in farming, and that's still the case. However, I was brought up with Scottish traditional music, but it wasn't sort of seeping through the walls 24 hours a day. It was just something that, you know, now and again, maybe twice a year, three times a year, something like that, we would have sort of relatives over and have a musical evening, which consisted of Scottish traditional music. And so in my sort of infant years, I would play by ear. My father could not read music, but he played many of the Scottish music tunes, that is. And my mother, on the other hand, she was forced to have piano lessons as a youngster, but she couldn't play by ear. So she was quite keen that I sort of study properly and learn to read music. So I sort of combine the two nowadays. I mean, I love just to experiment and to improvise and things. But also, at the same time, I'm dealing with fairly complex percussion scores too.
Well, you have an advantage in that you have perfect pitch.
Well, it's an advantage when it comes to reading scores. It used to be an advantage in that I could sing pretty accurately and I could recognize pitch and things. But now it's particularly useful for reading scores and saves quite a lot of time.
You are a solo percussionist, and that's a rather unusual thing to be. You were interested in really bringing percussion from the back of the orchestra and put it up front. Why was that important?
Well, I think first of all, I had no inclination and certainly no idea that I would ever become a professional musician. So I wasn't pushing myself. I enjoyed it immensely. And I did feel that if I studied music and eventually became a professional full time, it would take the enjoyment away. And so I was determined, having finally, at about the age of 15, made the decision to become a professional, that it would be under my terms. That is, I desperately wanted to perform. I desperately wanted control over the interpretation of the music and programming. And I knew that, you know, it was hard to find the repertoire. Many of the pieces are not published. And so I had a lot of digging to do. But this was part of the adventure. It was part of the fun. So it was kind of a clear-cut thing for me. I mean, if I couldn't do that, if I couldn't become a soloist, then I'd simply do something else and keep music as a hobby.
Well, I think of percussion as really 20th century music, as an instrument that really has come into its own in the 20th century. Does that mean that it's very difficult to find things to play, compositions to play? Do you have to really commission others to write for you?
Well, there's certainly the repertoire out there. I mean, it depends what sort of repertoire you're looking for. You know, at the end of last century, the beginning of this century, there's a great deal of xylophone works and vibraphone pieces, very much in the kind of variety lollipop style, which is just wonderful to play, great fun to play. But of course, it is quite light sounding, very joyful. And then, of course, marimba really came along, I would say, round about the 1950s. And so there are now many, many marimba specialists. And the actual sort of mechanics of playing and the construction of the instruments have improved greatly in the past 40, 50 years or so. And so this means that composers are taking advantage of this and exploring these instruments more. So, you know, in my library, I have over 300 percussion concertos. I play, or I have played, 53 of those, and my repertoire is always increasing. But, you know, nevertheless, there's still a lot of digging to do. I mean, a lot of those pieces I've had to actually go direct to the composers and say, look, you know, have you written for percussion? And sometimes they say, oh, yes, 20 years ago, I wrote a percussion concerto. And, you know, they take this out of their cupboards and blow the cobwebs off. And then suddenly you discover you have a fairly interesting piece. Hmm. Sometimes not, as the case may be. But also, it's important for me to commission pieces. I mean, I have 10 new pieces on the go at one time. And that's just a vital part of my work, where I have new pieces written. My aim is to perform them more than once, I have to say. And hopefully, if I really feel something for the piece, then I try to record it.
When we talk about percussion, how many different instruments do you play? What are the possibilities?
Oh, heavens, I don't know. I haven't actually, you know, counted as such. But, you know, in my collection at home, I have over 700 instruments. And, of course, many of those I actually play. And it is a great interest of mine when I travel around the world to try to explore the various instruments from the country I happen to be in, and try to get the basics of playing the instrument kind of in my mind. But, you know, that's hard because many, many of them you can actually specialise in. And in a way, you know, I feel sorry if I feel like a tourist with the instrument or I'm just sort of skimming the surface, which I know I often do. But nevertheless, it can just perhaps trigger something in my mind. So a lot of the more exotic instruments I use, I employ in my writing for television and radio, which I do quite a lot of.
Well, I want to play something from one of your CDs called Wind in the Bamboo Grove, and this is a piece called Rhapsody, written by Takeyoshi Yoshiaka. Thank you. guest is Evelyn Glennie. She's a solo percussionist and joins us today on Fresh Air to talk about music and to talk about her career as a solo percussionist. Well, you are profoundly deaf, but I don't imagine that that's a silent world. I imagine that there are sounds in your world. Can you describe what those sounds are?
No, I can't. But yes, my sort of world is full of sounds, but it's full of my sounds. It's imagined sounds. You know, when I look at a score, everything is sort of exaggerated, I suppose. Everything is enhanced. Some instruments I've never heard before when I had hearing as an infant. And so therefore, you know, I can only sort of draw on what they sound like to me at this moment. So, for example, certain instruments may sound like a crackle to me. Some sounds I just simply do not hear at all. It's not in my hearing register, but I feel more. Quite often, if I'm playing, for example, a marimba concerto or something, I'll place the marimba on the cello side of the orchestra or on the bass side because I can actually feel more. The violin register is not something I easily hear where I distinguish the pitches. So all the time, you know, I'm getting the impacts of the sounds pretty well, but I am missing the pitches and missing the sort of duration of certain pitches or sounds. So, for example, if I'm playing things like cymbals or glockenspiels or triangles, things that actually last for quite a while, I'll actually get that impact of sound. It may be a very distorted sound, but I recognise that sound as being a particular instrument. And it's vital that I play on instruments that I'm familiar with, hence why I have my own equipment that's stationed in Tokyo and the US and two within Europe, because I know how those instruments speak, right down to the last sort of, you know, Chinese splash cymbal. If I'm suddenly playing on other people's equipment, it's very disorienting for me. In the same way as, you know, if I'm suddenly playing a vibraphone and then playing, let's say, the same notes on a marimba or on a xylophone, the pitch can be totally different to me. So again, unless I'm playing on my own instruments, it's like learning. When I say learning, I mean hearing a new instrument. Of course, the technique is there, but it can be very disorienting.
Well, for the hearing world, music is sound. And for you, it sounds that music is a certain kind of vibration that you feel.
Well, it's an experience. I mean, I don't think I rely on one particular sense more than the other. Basically, I use all my senses. I mean, I use my eyes, I use my ears, I use touch, which is an extremely important sense. Feel as well. I mean, I have to know what the instruments are made of in order to understand what kind of sound is being produced. All sorts of things like that. So it's just something that you develop.
Evelyn Glennie is our guest on Fresh Air. She's a solo percussionist, and we'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is solo percussionist Evelyn Glennie. You began to lose your hearing at around the age of 8, and I know from looking at your autobiography, you actually made a note in your diary questioning, I think you were watching a TV program, questioning, am I losing my hearing? What happened that made you lose your hearing?
Well, it's really just the nerves that have deteriorated, that's all, nothing else. And so over a period of years, I gradually deteriorated, which meant that I had time to adjust. Unfortunately, I had a very sort of normal and supportive family who didn't make a fuss of the situation at all. And that was probably the best thing that could have happened to me.
Do you still have any kind of hearing? You're called profoundly deaf. Can you hear anything?
Oh, yeah. Profoundly deaf means you have residual hearing. It's just that it may be sort of different sounds that you're experiencing than perhaps you. And, you know, I recognize the sound of my phone. I mean, I know what a sort of normal telephone sounds like, or I remember the sound of the phone on the farm when I was a youngster. But it sounds extremely different now. But nevertheless, I recognize that sound as being the telephone. So therefore, I hear a telephone.
So if you hear a dog bark or something like that, there's a kind of residual sound that you have in
sometimes,
your head?
Yeah. It depends on the situation, what sort of sound, where I am in relation to that sound. If I'm feeling, a little bit down or something or not quite on the ball, then I hear less. Whereas sometimes if I'm extremely sharp and absolutely wide awake, then, I hear pretty well.
Well, we're carrying on a conversation. I don't know whether you can hear anything that I'm saying to you. Can you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
And you're also reading, it looks like you're reading my face and not necessarily just my lips. And
yeah.
I'm just curious about how you're figuring out what I'm saying to you.
Well,
how does
it
that work?
It is the whole sort of body movement. It isn't even just a face, because out of the corner of my eyes, I'm watching what you're doing as far as nodding is concerned, as far as your hand movements is concerned, and also the fact that you're leaning over the desk. And thankfully, there isn't a microphone blocking your face.
We're wide open here.
So,
But this is something, obviously, you had to learn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember sort of with my mother kind of sitting in front of a mirror and things like that. And we would sort of say certain words and eventually sentences and things like that. You're not picking up every single word by any means, but it is the overall effect. And in a way, it's like playing music. Of course, you're concerned about every single note, but the overall effect is just getting from the bottom to the top to the bottom or whatever, creating some sort of structure within a phrase, which is just like a sentence.
Well, I want to play something called Veni, Veni, Emmanuel. This was composed by James McMillan, actually for you. Mm-hmm. How did this come about?
Well, I remember experiencing an orchestral piece by James McMillan, The Confessions of Isabel Gowdy, about 3 or 4 years ago. And I was completely bowled over. It was just incredible. And and I happened also to be a fan of some of James's other music too. But this particular piece was extraordinary for it to be an orchestral piece. And so I simply went to him and I said, would you care to write a percussion concerto? And he said yes, and I happened to be working with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra at the time, and they were extremely interested in the idea. And so they got together with Christian Salveson and they commissioned the piece, and so it eventually got written and performed and recorded.
Well, this is something called Transition, and it's from Veni, Veni, Emmanuel, composed by James McMillan. Performing this, and you're literally in the middle of the music, what does it sound like to you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It can sound so different each time. I mean, it's impossible for me to put that into words.
But you can feel the crescendos, the loudness, the softness.
The
rhythms,
yeah,
playing mm-hmm. against each other. You're playing with the Philadelphia Orchestra this weekend, and I know you'll be working with Björk, a performer from Iceland. You seem to have very broad, eclectic tastes. Is that true? I mean, that you haven't really categorized yourself one way or another.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm just a musician. That's all I am. I happen to be promoted as a classical musician, I suppose. But, you know, I'm so intrigued by a lot of the percussion playing from around the world, and it helps me as a musician. And also someone like Björk, I mean, on her new album, we've co-written a piece and where it's simply for voice and tuned car exhaust pipes. That's all it is. And, you know, I love also designing instruments. I write music for the media. You know, it's just something that I'm intrigued by. And, you know, at the moment I'm learning the Highland bagpipes and so on. And, you know, it's just this curiosity I have. But as long as I'm performing, then I feel very happy. And as long as I'm helping the development of percussion and also my own needs as a musician, then I'll be quite happy.
I'm curious what kinds of instruments you have designed.
Oh, heavens, we have quite a lot at home, ranging from the exhaust pipes, which isn't so unusual, many people do that, to instruments called the simtac, which is this huge piece of steel that creates incredible high-pitched sounds, very resonant sounds. And the design of the instruments I happen to see in a Japanese film. And we also have this two-octave sort of plastic tubing instrument that we call a batonka. What else do we have? We just basically explore with all sorts of materials, and we have balloon drums and all sorts of things like that, which, you know, I find really quite interesting.
Solo percussionist Evelyn Glennie. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let's get back to our conversation with percussionist Evelyn Glennie. She's unusual in the world of classical music because she's one of the few solo percussionists and because she's profoundly deaf.
Do you want audiences to know that you're deaf? Is that something that you want to really keep private?
Oh, it is personal, because I think that, first of all, I don't mention it in my concert biography, because at the end of the day, I hope people are coming along to hear the music. That's the main priority. And also, it's very difficult for me to talk about, to actually give specific answers. Quite often for newspaper interviews, they want to know, well, how do you hear? What can you hear? Well, how do you hear? What can you hear? You know, it's a huge subject. And I'm just a humble musician. That's all I am. You know, quite often I don't know how I do things. Mm-hmm. And I'm in so many different situations, and I'm dealing with so many different oral situations that it's impossible for me to put into words what actually happens. And, you know, if I asked you, well, how do you hear? You might say, well, through my ears.
Right.
Well, but what actually happens? You know, what are you hearing? It's a huge question to ask even a hearing person.
Feels like I asked you a bunch of those questions. Does it feel like an overly personal question?
It is personal. And strangely enough, it seems to be more personal as time goes on. Because the more I develop as a musician, the more things I'm discovering, and the more things I'm discovering about myself. You know, it's in a way, it's a bit like teaching. I mean, I enjoy giving masterclasses, but I don't teach regularly for the simple reason that if I start analyzing what I do and how I'm doing it, it will take that spontaneity away, I think, from what I do. So it's almost just like babysitting. But then again, I don't want to just give out frivolous answers just to sort of get them off my back sort of thing. I'm not interested in that. And I'm not interested in trying to make light of it either. It's something that I don't present to people. It doesn't come from me. They have to approach me if they want something. But it is, you know, a personal thing.
I do want to ask you, though, one more question about it, which is, do you feel any responsibility to try to dispel some of the myths and stereotypes about what deaf people can and can't do? Do you feel a sense of responsibility that way?
I mean, that's an interesting question, and I appreciate your sensitivity towards the whole subject. But I think that You're right. I mean, we imagine the word deafness to be about silence, and we imagine the word music to be about sound. So to suddenly bring the two is just nonsense. But of course, it isn't. We have fast food music that we're all sort of faced with, but we're not actually hearing what we're really listening to, if you know what I mean. And, you know, certainly in the UK, we now have many, many schools for the deaf that use music when the children are literally newly born, so that they can begin to appreciate and differentiate certain vibrations, certain sounds and things like that. And this will help their speech. And there's a wonderful Danish man called Klaus Bang, and he uses a lot of percussion, especially tone bars, in order to help these youngsters, where they are relating the vibrations to their voice boxes and so on. And of course, some of them are interested in music, and so therefore they reach a fairly good level of playing. Some are simply not, but nevertheless, it helps their coordination and their balance and their patience and all sorts of things, and just their awareness of sound. So in that respect, I'm extremely interested in what music therapy is about, or I'm curious about it. I'm by no means an expert. So, you know, if I can help in that kind of way, then that's great.
Do you have then some projects that you're working on in your studio at home?
Well, at the moment, I mean, our studio is geared up towards writing and for composers to use. And so I've just finished a sort of survival program. That is a wildlife program. It was about baboons in Kenya. You know, and I write sort of car adverts and things like that there. And so we're always doing something like that in the studio. And but my own sort of performing projects, I mean, I usually tour the States at least 4 months a year, and that will be the case next year. My next major tour will be in the spring. And the recordings keep happening. I have another recording released next year called Drumming. And this is all on untuned instruments, including some of the homemade stuff. So beware. And so, I mean, normally I give about 110 concerts a year. So, you know, it keeps me out of mischief.
Thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Percussionist Evelyn Glennie will perform this weekend with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Let's hear one of the new songs she wrote with the elfin Icelandic singer Björk. This is My Spine.
Working, creating.